Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
This episode is brought to you by Essex Market. Essex Market is New York City's most historic public market, proudly located on Manhattan's Lower East Side. Find the freshest produce, meat, fish, and specialty foods from over 30 unique vendors. Learn more about the market's family of small neighborhood businesses at essexmarket.nyc.
Hi, and welcome to A Taste of the Past. I'm your host, Linda Palaccio, on this journey through culinary history. And today, as we sit here and record this episode of A Taste of the Past, we're still in the midst of the second major wave of the coronavirus pandemic. A vaccine is on its way, but people are understandably getting restless and want to gather with friends and family, especially with the holiday season on the horizon. And we're getting the itch to travel again. Now, believe it or not, there's been somewhat of an upside to all this stay-at-home and quarantining that we've been under for the past many months, and that is the reversal of some of the destructive environmental effects of too many cars, too much human impact on certain areas, but still, the hospitality industry and tourism has been ravaged. Now, as we look forward to returning to some sort of normalcy in the months ahead, maybe there's a way for a tourism reset. Reset seems to be one of those buzzwords that are supposed to elicit positive reactions, right? Well, think about it. I'm sure that you've all experienced travel to some popular area, whether it's local or abroad, and the crowds were practically intolerable. And the mess left behind certainly made an unappealing sight for sightseeing. But, you know, if you get outside the cities, there are places to be discovered and cultures to learn. In fact, some of these cities, unfortunately, have been somewhat abandoned. And we can maybe do some good. Maybe we can help revive the economy of these places, and we can help preserve some of the culture. Well, there have been a couple of interesting articles about that recently, and a term has been pinned to it called regenerative tourism. And that is kind of giving back, if you will, giving back to the area that we're visiting. But as has been mentioned, it does require an attitudinal shift. And that shift would mean that fewer groups, smaller groups, fewer people, places maybe outside, off the beaten path. And one tour guide who can help set the tone and knows a lot about that is my friend and the wonderful writer, blogger, and travel leader, Elizabeth Minkiwi. Elizabeth has been hosting and guiding small groups primarily in Rome for many years, and now in areas a little further afield in Italy. And this, we hope, is something that I think people are going to, well, I know they're flocking to it because some of her future dates are already sold out. So listen carefully, people, and plan carefully. Elizabeth has written about food, style, and culture from Italy. She's been living in Italy for over 25 years. And her website, Elizabeth Minkiwi, .com, and it's her blog, and it has won awards for the best culinary coverage and travel coverage, and she's the author of many books, including Eating Rome, Eating My Way Through Italy, and her most recent, the beautiful book, The Italian Table. She's also the founder of the Eat Italy apps, and won many awards for all of her books and all her apps. And I am so happy that she joins us today from Rome. Yes, via our computer setup here and our remote recording. But still in all, wonderful to have you, Elizabeth.
Thank you. I really wish I could be in the studio. I miss New York.
I know. I know. It's so much fun when we sit together with that wild boar over our heads in our Heritage Radio Network studio.
Thank you so much for having me, even if it's virtual.
Well, you know, it's interesting because it was kind of a spur of the moment when I was reading your most recent newsletter, and you talked a lot about the, one article in particular, a CNN tourism travel article about, you know, kind of these hotels that are popping up and traveling to different places. And then I happened to notice another article that was written about this regenerative tourism, trying to, you know, to give back. Tell me a little bit about some of these trips that you've arranged to other places. And one thing in particular I want you to talk about is this one aspect. Somebody, it's been around for a while, but I just happened to note the name of it, and that's the Albergo Diffuso, or the Scattered Hotel. Talk about that.
Well, you know, the whole idea of regenerative tourism, you know, which is sort of this weird word that doesn't really come easily to anybody these days. You know, we're used to saying sustainable tourism, and and then at the other end is regular tourism, I guess. And you know, we've always, I work with my daughter, Sophie, and we've been trying more and more every year to do tours that have less of an impact on the places that we go. And you mentioned that we were, you know, starting to do these tours in Rome. That's where we started. And before all this happened, we decided already last year that we were going to stop doing our week in Rome tours, just for this reason, that we felt that we couldn't in good conscience bring more people to the city, which was already sort of overflowing with tourism. And this is sort of the idea of regenerative tourism, is that you leave a place better than it was before you got there. And, you know, sustainable tourism is you leave it unchanged. And of course, you know, that's a good thing too. But if you can do something that actually sets up an economy, helps an economy grow in a way that's good for the place you're in. And it was our feeling, you know, we I love the restaurants that are in Rome, and it's sadly over the last, you know, few months, many are closing, but there were probably, you know, there may have been too many restaurants here. You know, I'm saying this and a lot of people might get mad, but a lot of the economy in the very center of Rome was servicing tourism that was not sustainable and certainly not regenerative. And we're seeing how fragile that was, that system. It wasn't really part of the place. And so we've already started, you know, planning our week in Italy tours to places that not only have a culture that is, I hate using the word authentic, but of the place and very well established, and sort of inserting ourselves in there in a way that supports them, because often these places are in, you know, out of the way locations. We you know, we go to Puglia, but we go way down in Salento. We're going to Sicily, and I'm always surprised that people, you know, don't go on their own to Sicily, but you know, they do. They maybe get off a cruise ship and go to Taormina, but they don't get much further than that. We go to Parma. And you'd think, you know, Parma, everybody thinks, a lot of people go to Parma, but there's really barely any hotels in Parma. You know, there's only a handful. So, I mean, it does lend itself to a kind of tourist that, you know, wants to insert themselves in a culture that already is well established in a way that, you know, we have a small footprint. And, you know, by bringing our money there, we help support things that might otherwise be in danger of dying out. And our most recent tour is to Abruzzo. And I can guarantee you that most of my clients, you know, our guests that come on our tours, I would say 90% of them have never been to Abruzzo. I mean, most Italians have never been to Abruzzo. And it's one of the poorest regions in Italy. It's central. It's east of Rome, sort of south of Tuscany. And it's beautiful. It's just gorgeous. And it has a number of village. It was very, very damaged in the last earthquakes. And it has beautiful, beautiful villages. And we, the challenge for us when we're doing these tours is finding a place to stay because you want to sort of balance out, you know, not leaving a footprint with, you know, having plumbing. So, right. so we look for hotels that are, you know, of a certain level. And that's not always easy to find, and especially the places we're going. Luckily for us, there is a man that founded this hotel, Sesancio, and it's located in a little village, and it's an albergo diffuso. And albergo diffuso means a scattered hotel. And what he did was this was already an idea that existed. He didn't invent this, but he certainly embraced it. And the idea is that there's no real one building that's a hotel. The hotel is scattered throughout this small village. And so it leaves very little impact on the town. And it's, you really are able to, I mean, other people have done it, but he's very good at sort of capturing the spirit of living as people used to live in these villages, not necessarily from a material way, but actually he captures the spirit of it in a way. I mean, I'm getting goosebumps now talking about it because it's really a special place. And, you know, you really understand both the sense of community and the sense of isolation that living in a place like this engenders. And then through that, you get this a real insight into the culture, which is I find absolutely unique.
Right. Now, some of these rooms, are they, from what I understand, some of them are actually in the town, but they're maybe in private homes, you know,
he's bought these buildings. So he's gone ahead. The hotel actually owns the buildings. They're in various buildings throughout the town. I mean, the town is not that big. There's only two roads in it and a church. And but there,
I say, is there any town in Abruzzo that's not very small? Right. They're all very small, right?
Yeah, they're mostly small. But this is really like a little village. And so, you know, you'll have a room, you know, in one building and another room in another building. And then the cantina, which is one of the places where you can eat, is in another building. Then the restaurant's in another building. The reception, which is barely there, is in another building. And so you never, there's no lobby, for instance. There's some common areas, but you have to sort of make the effort to find them and be in them and, you know, do different things in them, like one you drink wine in, one you would have a tea in, one you would have dinner in, one they have a kitchen that we use for cooking classes. And each of the rooms are done in such a way that the materials are all local, all handcrafted, and not, you know, there's no upholstery there. There's no soft chairs. There's no, even though the rooms are quite luxurious, there's no, you know, couches. There's, you know, there's a hard bench that's made out of handcrafted wood. There's, you know, the beds are made with mattresses that are still stuffed with wool, so they're kind of firm. But
now, wait a minute. I'm not so sure this is sounding good. No.
No. I know. And when I say it out loud, but the thing is, it's not like going and staying at a Four Seasons hotel. But you know, right. You go and stay at a Four Seasons hotel, and the Four Seasons hotel, for a reason, are exactly the same whether you're in Beijing or whether you're in Bel Air.
That's right. I mean, joke is what, you know, you can't remember which day it is because you're in the same hotel.
Well, it's
same
exactly
furnishings.
The same hotel. Right. So this is so different that it really makes you, it's very luxurious. You know, the sheets are hand woven, the blankets are hand woven. You know, it's a luxury, a different kind of luxury, I think. And it's one that really changes the way you think, which is, I think, these days, to have that kind of experience is luxury in itself. You know, it's not roughing it. It's not camping or anything, but it's really entering into a culture.
Yeah. And I think that what you mentioned, you know, entering into a culture is so important. I mean, how many people, you know, travel to, you know, the major sites, you know, Paris, Rome, Florence, and they come back and they say, well, yeah, I saw all the, you know, I clicked everything off my bucket list and I saw all the major sites, But did they ever sample what was really a classic dish or did of food? Did they ever really get a sense of the culture and the people? I mean, most likely not. You know, they are in these huge, many of them go on these big tour. And I'm not, you know, not dissing the experience of being able to go, but they're on these large tour buses in large groups and kind of shepherded through.
But you know? I think we can diss that kind of tourism just a bit.
Yeah, well, okay. All right.
Just because it was so damaging.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
Because
yes.
Now you see the cities that have depended on this kind of tourism, New York. Look at what's going to happen to New York that depended
That's
on
right.
this kind of tourism. And I mean, not that there's big buses of people going through New York, but there's big groups of people, and it's a kind of mass tourism that we're seeing now is not sustainable. And it wasn't sustainable. It's not sustainable for Rome, for London, for Paris. And we're switching over to a different kind of tourism that, yes, maybe it's going to be more expensive. But the sort of tourism that was less expensive, I think, was a sort of a false economy. And, mm-hmm. You know, there was the Airbnb experience, which is totally failing now. And mm-hmm. And I don't know. I mean, we all profited off of it and we all, you know, enjoyed it. We all were able to take cheap flights places, but at what cost?
Right.
And so now I think everybody's trying to figure out the next step. And it's not easy to figure it out. Nobody knows.
Right.
But I think we're on the right track to sort of go off the beaten track and go to these small places and try and give support to smaller communities in a way that matters.
That's right. And there was this one, maybe it was Sextantio, that wasn't there a town that was all but abandoned? I mean, you read about this. I've read about this a lot over the years, where mm-hmm. a lot of these smaller towns have been, quasi abandoned, and people were selling
Sestancio,
homes for next
Stefano.
To nothing, right?
Yeah, well, Santo Stefano, where Sestancio is, was completely abandoned, and Matera, where the other Sestancio is, again, was also mm-hmm. abandoned. And now, you know, in the last year or so, we've been hearing about these other towns, say in Sicily, that are offering houses for €1 if you come and restore them. And there's endless abandoned towns, and where, you know, after World War II, a lot of the population left the cities, left these towns to go in either to the cities to find jobs and work, or left the country, you know, going to Australia or America or Canada.
That's right.
To find work.
Yeah.
And so now, you know, people are looking, are buying these places, and it's not cheap to restore these houses. But once you do, I mean, and it's also challenging because, you know, if you have an abandoned village, it's not like, you know, you have to get water there, you have to get electricity there. So it creates a challenge, but if you're willing to sort of invest, then I think it's well worth it.
All right. But I mean, obviously with this has been going, as you say, this has been established for a while, and a lot of this tourism, I mean, I think it was late 90s that some of it started, but certainly by the early 2000s, 2007, I think a couple of them had started and were revving up. I mean, they really revived the economy in these small towns to a certain extent, right?
Yep. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And and they've been very much copied, you know, because now you go, I was in Puglia during the brief, like, few weeks when we could travel this summer. And my daughter and I and my husband, Domenico, you know, we were going to all these small towns, and they're all full of little hotels where a room was here, a room there, and you'd go and check in, and then you'd, somebody would take you down a little alley to your room. And it's, you know, not as all encompassing as say Sestancio, but it's a different version of that, which is enables the town to really survive, I think.
That's right. And I mean, until this time, prior to, let's say, the 1990s, I mean, the food, the cuisine of these smaller towns was all but unknown. And people are now rediscovering it, and you know, now books abound with, you know, the dishes of Puglia and
Sicily. Even so, certainly, there's so much to discover, you know, and that's the great thing. You know, that's what Sophie and I have been trying to do, you know, when we could, especially, you know, we were up in Umbria for those 4 months of the real lockdown, and then stayed on when things started opening up, and we could travel around Umbria, and we kept visiting people, and you know, that for instance, we'd been going to the town of Trevi. You know, we do tours in Umbria too, by the way. And we've been going to the town of Trevi, you know, for forever. But there was this dish there in a festival, which we had never known about, which is a specific kind of celery. And they stuff it and they fry it and they bake it and they put cheese on it. And it's this amazing dish that we had never heard about. And it literally was only, you know, 30 kilometers from our house where we've lived for 30 years. And, you know, so there, I'm just saying, even though there's books, you know, galore out there about regional Italian cuisine, there's still something in the next town that you've never heard of. So,
that's right.
You know, there's no lack of places to
well, that's, and that's what I want to talk about. I want to get to the food and your cooking and food experiences that you give people. So we're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the cuisine of these places.
Essex Market is a historic public market located on Manhattan's Lower East Side. The market's 30-plus vendors source thousands of unique products, like locally made Jersey cheese to Nordic smoked specialties. This holiday season, Essex Market is offering 5 carefully curated gift boxes. Feast on the finest products from their family of small business owners. And that's great news for the team at HRN, because we're always searching for unique gifts this time of year. Plus, these gift boxes are available for nationwide shipping now through December 18th. Send a taste of New York City to your loved ones both near and far, and get 10% off when you enter promo code HRN10 at checkout. Visit shop.essexmarket.nyc to learn more and to start sending some food-filled holiday cheer today.
This episode is supported by Nourish and Flourish. Nourish and Flourish features behind-the-scenes stories about artisans, producers, farmers, growers, and other makers in America, along with delicious and wholesome recipes. The latest issue of Nourish and Flourish is a special artisanal gift guide showcasing some of America's finest products, including everything from the farm and garden to eco-friendly home goods, kitchen and cooking essentials, bath and body, original art, blown glass, seasonal recipes, and so much more. Shop online to support local and buy local. Together, we can make a difference. Learn more at nourishandflourish.site.
Hi, we're back, and I'm speaking with Elizabeth Minkeely, a food writer and travel writer and tour guide, a culinary tour guide. I guess, what would you call yourself, Elizabeth? A culinary tour guide?
I have a tour company. I own a tour
travel
company.
Okay. All right. You've always focused on the food, which of course you're in Italy. What else do you focus on, right?
Food. I was originally an art historian, and I wrote a long time about design and architecture. So I bring that to the table as well. Mm-hmm. For the last, say, 12 years, I've focused mostly on food.
Sure, you see all the statues and you got to eat, you know, you get
exactly,
hungry.
You get hungry.
and the gardens. You wrote beautiful garden books too, yeah.
Yeah.
So you and Sophie, your daughter is just, she's doing a bang of business on her own. I mean, she's really grown into the business with you. It's wonderful to see. Tell me, let's say you take a group, first of all, people have to understand these towns that we were talking about. If you've seen pictures, photographs in magazines, or if you've been fortunate enough to travel there, the towns, you know the towns, they're these rock, usually stone-built towns, and all encompassed around, you know, within walls, and you walk through the winding paths, and that's by and large how many of them are. Not all that way, but many of them, right?
I would say a good percentage of them are like that.
Right.
I can tell you, we were talking a bit about the cuisine and how we approach food in our tour.
Yes.
And for me, I mean, for instance, I'll talk about our Umbria tour. And, you know, our tours are 6 days long, and each day we visit usually another small town, and food is the focus, but that's only a way to put culture in context. And mm-hmm. so while we're talking about food and we're obviously eating and drinking, you know, it's never just about the food. It's about, you know, the plates. So we'll visit ceramic makers. It's about the tablecloths. So we'll visit, you know, people who are working on looming or artisans. We'll also visit people who are actually making the food. So cheese makers. And so we're able to discover, and you know, we do go to, you know, churches and look at the art. We have walks around and talk about architecture, because food doesn't exist in a vacuum. And I think that the main focus that our tours are, although they're culinary tours, and we do cooking lessons and cooking demonstrations, and we visit wineries, it's always a way into the culture that gets you there in a really fun way and a deeper way.
Yeah, I think that's that makes so much sense. I mean, it's as you said, you know, it puts culture in context. And so often in culinary history, that's what it is. That's how we learn about everyone has to eat, and they all have, you know, their foods. And that's so true. That's puts all the, you know, the culture that we're trying to get to. Best way to learn about people is through their food often, you know. So how large are the groups that you usually have?
Anywhere from 8 to 12 people, depending
8 to 12,
on.
Yeah,
12 is usually the most. Sometimes in Puglia, I've done tours that are larger, but that usually is when we're staying at like a masseria, which is a kind of farmhouse down in Puglia, and we stay in one place. And I did a tour last year with Elizabeth Gilbert. And mm-hmm. I think we were about 20 people for that tour. It was a bit bigger.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
But we, you know, and I'm doing one with Melissa Clark in September. And mm-hmm. that one is in Puglia too, and that'll be a little bit bigger. But usually we try and keep them certainly under 18 people, even when they're the big tour would be 18, but our most common tours are 8 to 12.
Right. And you have an opportunity, do you have cooking classes with them as well, don't you?
We do. And I usually at least once or twice a year collaborate with somebody who's either a chef or a cook with the author. So I'm working with Melissa Clark. We're doing the Abruzzo tour. Evan Kleiman is coming with us.
Mm-hmm.
And so Evan's a cookbook author. She also has a radio show, Good Food, KCRW, Good Food.
KCRW, so right.
Yeah. And so she's going to be doing some cooking classes along with the ladies from the town. And so we always do, you know, cooking classes, cooking demonstrations, usually right. Sometimes they're in a restaurant. Sometimes they're in the kitchens of people's homes. We're doing a tour next November with Pasta Grannies. Do you know Pasta Grannies?
Vicky, yes, Benison. Of course. Yes, so Vicky's been on she's been on the show.
Right. Yeah, so Vicky and I are doing a tour together in November, and that's focusing on the culture of Pasta Grannies around Parma. And and so I really love collaborating with people like that who mm-hmm. do things that similar to me, either write or, you know, have radio shows or and exploring that side of, you know, they bring in something new to the experience as well.
Right. Certainly when they know the area. Well, we can only hope that this will be open and go through. I mean, I know that a lot of your upcoming, the spring events are sold out.
They are.
Yeah, which is wonderful.
Well, no, I have room in the spring events, actually. The ones in the fall, or I have rooms in May and June, or I still have places open.
Okay.
And you know, I sent out my newsletter yesterday. Everybody should subscribe to my newsletter, and you'll get first dibs at all the tours. And I got a lot of
ElizabethMinchili.com. Yes.
And I'm on Instagram, eMinchili. Minchili, that's how it's spelled.
Minchili is, well, yes, exactly. With two L's, remember that. Right.
Yeah, Minchili. And eMinchili. And so we have some spaces next year. And
a lot of
our tours were moved from last year to the coming year, and mm-hmm. And so they got filled. But I added a tour in July, which is a season I usually don't do food tours, but
right.
we decided to add one because there was so much request, you know, for people wanting to move their tours. So we're doing a special summer edition of our Puglia tour, which should be fantastic because, you know, usually the other, besides going off the beaten track, we usually go off the beaten season. And so our tours tend to be either in the spring or the fall or even in the winter. And we usually avoid the summer just because it's a little bit more crowded. But we decided we'd make an exception for Puglia in the summer because we really wanted to explore fish and the sea and do that. So we're doing that in July, which should be really fun. Right.
And Abruzzo, I think of my husband's paternal relatives came from Abruzzo. Mm-hmm. And we went there to visit many, 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 many years ago and stayed. And unfortunately, we have not been back in all our trips to Italy, but we stayed there with them. And it was quite an experience because little had changed for the better and sometimes for depending on which family for the worse. But the food was so memorable. Everything
the
was
food,
just...
The food of Abruzzo is just so good. And I think it's because it's, I mean, it's always, you know, we always try and find local food, but the food from there, mm-hmm. somehow it's, I don't know, a lot, most people when we go there, they just say we've never eaten anything like this. And it's true. It's very, very different from if you're used to coming to Italy and going to Tuscany or Rome or even the South. Abruzzo is very different.
That's right. And I remember we left and we had to eat. It was around Easter time. So, of course, there were two sides of the family, his father, his paternal grandmother and grandfather that came from two different, you know, homes nearby. Mm-hmm. But we had to eat Easter lunch at both homes because we didn't want to offend anyone.
Right.
It was, if you think it's the most wonderful thing in the world, well, it was wonderful, but boy, we paid for it.
By the time you got to that third lamb.
Yeah, right, exactly. And one of the, and the food at one of the homes was still cooked over an open fireplace. I mean, period. You know, that was it. You know, waiting for the water to boil in the open fireplace for the pasta, yeah. You know, for the alla chitarra pasta. So many wonderful things. And generous people, too. I'm sure you must find this in your trips and your tours, that the people are so open and so generous.
Yeah, and, you know, I've actually met during this time of, you know, being at home and being so active on social media, I've actually met a lot of people through, say, Instagram, you know, that are there, younger people. And that's really mm-hmm. the great thing, too, is that we're meeting, you know, you mentioned my daughter, Sophie, who's, you know, 30 years old, and she's, you know, very involved in the food scene here. And there's so many people of her age that are now sort of, it's coming naturally to them to do a type of regenerative tourism. So it's not that they're going backwards. It's that what they're creating from the ground up is something that, you know, very much speaks to us. And so there's a lot of people, as soon as we can travel, that, you know, we'd like to go. And Sophie's actually, I think, this weekend going to Molise, which is a region most people have never even heard of.
That's right.
It's even more isolated than Abruzzo. But since for the weird reasons of Italy at the moment, the lockdown rules allow her to go travel there next weekend. So she's going to go there with a friend. And she's, you know, there's so many amazing, you know, producers of food. And so many of them are so young. So maybe that will be our next destination.
Now, that's regenerative too. Yes, indeed. For sure. And it is, I mean, cities are great. That's not to abandon the cities. But yes, as you said, it's not sustainable. And we know there are tons of crowds there. So you go and you see your sights and then escape to the outer boroughs, if you will.
Cities, obviously, you should go to the cities. And I encourage people to go to the cities. But I don't think they need me holding their hand in the cities.
Right.
You know?
All right. That's right. Well, Elizabeth, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. And I miss sitting and having a glass of wine together. We have to do that.
Soon. We can do that soon.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And I encourage people to read about these regenerative tourism plans that people have all over, all over the world. But and to certainly check out Elizabeth Minkeely's website, and that again is Elizabeth Minkeely, M-I-N-C-H-I-L-L-I, as she said, Minchili, and .com and check out those tours.
And there's also, lots on Instagram. We've been doing a lot of videos on Instagram lately too.
Yeah, you are all over the place on Instagram. It's great. E. Minkili. Yes. And I think your work is terrific, and I think you're doing Italy a great service, and I encourage people to check it out.
And thank you.
And I look forward to seeing you soon. And I'm glad you could join me today by phone. By phone, by computer, by whatever electronic method. right. We're still going, right? Again. And so thanks, Elizabeth, and thank you for tuning in and listening. This, once again, has been A Taste of the Past.
A Taste of the Past is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, and more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.